Your Grace, King Tommen, what brings you back to the Sept to visit your High Sparrow?
High Sparrow, I'm very troubled.
Well, Your Grace, how could you be troubled? Your soul has truly been brought back to the faith of the Seven, as has your wife, Queen Marjorie.
Me troubles revolve around me wife. She's... well, she hasn't... this is difficult to say,
please,
High Sparrow.
I am just a vessel for the gods. You can tell me anything.
Well, my queen, she's not... she... how do I say it? I've been forced to pet Sir Pounce all by myself.
Well, Sir Pounce is the royal kitten, King Tom, and it should be your responsibility alone.
No. You're not quite getting it. You see, at night, when I'm in bed, I'm having to anoint me own knight.
As is the king's duty.
No. Listen. I don't think you understand. Now, I want you to think of it this way.
Yes.
How could I say it? It's a siege of River Run, party of one. Does that make... do you get...
No, it's...
Okay, all right.
Clearer, Tommen.
My sigil and my bed are stag. Do you understand?
Still not clear for the...
All right. High Sparrow, I've been pouring out a jar of wildfire in me britches.
No, it's still not clear, Tommen.
Listen, High Sparrow... your father was a cobbler. When you were my age, didn't you occasionally cobble your own shoes?
Oh, yes, now I understand. You mean, well, back in the day we used to call it tanning our own leather.
Yes.
Queen
Marjorie.
Yes. You've got a seven-pointed star in your pants, and Queen Marjorie won't let it see the light of the seven.
No.
I will speak to her immediately.
And then when I'm in bed with my queen, she makes me say things like, Sir Ilyn, bring me Ned Stark's head. Or she makes me say, the king can do as he likes so she can get her royal chamber wet.
Oh, this is horrible. I'll put Jaime and Cersei back in chains immediately for you. I only find myself attracted by very, very filthy women. Well, they should not have bathed for over a year.
The last time I was with a whore, I shot her with my older brother's crossbow. Ooh. It's a double R.
A double R?
R.I.P. Ross.
Oh, my. Well, listen, Tommen.
Yay?
Do you know why it's called the Faith of the Seven?
No idea.
Because I'm a full 7 inches. For you, it might be the Faith of the 3.5.
Wait, no.
That's what Marjorie told me.
I've been very busy. Many important matters require king's attention.
I'm king now. King now.
I am king.
I am
king.
I am
kiss it.
I am
kiss it again.
I am
your fingers or your
king.
Doesn't
fingers
discuss
your
battle plans.
I am
one,
but girls.
Your fingers or your tongue.
I am
the king. I'm telling mother.
Welcome to the Joffrey Podcast.
Oh, wow, amazing.
My name's Bubba. You can find me on Twitter at Fit and Trim. That's FITTNTRIM, at Fit and Trim on Twitter.
And I am Catfish.
Hey,
also
Catfish,
known as Catnip.
How you doing?
You can hit me up at CJGman67.
Hey. This is the Joffrey Podcast, and today,
JOP,
we are going to be breaking down episode 8, Catfish.
Whoa,
episode
whoa,
8 of
episode
season
eight.
6, entitled No One.
Well, who is it then?
It's No One, baby.
Oh, man.
It doesn't have a title.
Okay.
It's Untitled No One episode. Catfish.
Talk to me.
We just saw the episode here on HBO. We have not talked about our feelings at all. I want to know your rating out of 10.
I am going to give this 7.
7.
What I like to call double M's.
Double M's?
Yeah, mountain maulings.
Ooh, okay. Sort of makes sense. So 7 is not as high as you've gone before. It's certainly maybe... you've rated a lot of episode 7 this season. Give us your overall thoughts on the episode.
Well, we're at 7 and we still seem to be setting a lot of things up.
You mean we're
River,
at episode 8.
I'm sorry, 8. Sorry, yes. I'm just keep thinking of the 7, yeah. And while I agree, I believe that 9 and 10 are going to be blockbuster, this was still some setup. Also, River Run kind of ended with a thud. Arya situation, which I was holding back comment on because I thought somehow they're going to make this make sense.
Right.
It didn't kind of make sense. She got knifed a lot and she was still okay. And then she went on what can only be described as some sort of superhero chase and she was still fine. I was anticipating many broken bones and stitches torn out. That didn't work out so well for me. At King's Landing.
Yeah.
Except for the mountain mauling.
The double M.
Yeah, the double M. They set up the fact that there will be no trial by combat. Hey, that's great. Thank you for letting me know there won't be that excitement. I just felt like the one part that I did like,
yeah.
You didn't like this before. I liked them taking the time to have Tyrion try and establish a relationship with Missandei and Grey Worm.
Okay.
It worked out better this time. They did do some drinking. There was some horrible jokes told.
Right.
There was one joke told that I would like our listeners to finish telling. That seemed like that had the most promise, but only because we didn't hear the punchline.
Yeah, we didn't hear the punchline in season one either about the jackass going into the brothel with a honeycomb.
I think,
when will we hear that ending?
I think for some book readers also what happened with the BWBs.
The Brotherhood Without Banners.
Yeah, that sort of, it seemed to me that took away the fact that the three who attacked the Septon and the group were outliers instead of part of a new intense angry movement by the Brotherhood Without Banners seems to indicate that something from the books is not coming back that we thought was coming.
Right.
To me, there was a lot of anticlimactic things in this episode.
Okay.
And I did enjoy some of the things, which is why I gave it a 7. But it's a low 7.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
what about you, Bubba? Sorry, I just nattered on and on there.
No, I thought it was good. Catfish, I am going to agree with you in the ranking. I'm going to give this 7 what I like to call double W's.
Double W's?
Yeah, that's when the wine is working. Working wine. 7 working wines out of 10.
Okay.
There were things in this episode that were like, yeah, specifically when Daenerys came back.
Right.
Yeah, I thought that was a very powerful reveal. And then I did like, in some ways I didn't like, the Terminator chase through Braavos.
She really had that look on her face like Patrick, whatever his name was, from the guy who was the Terminator.
Yeah, Robert Patrick.
Robert Patrick, thank you. Just that look on her face, and she kept coming. And at a certain point, though, didn't you find that chase to be kind of ridiculous?
The waif was a T-1000.
She was coming, a T-1000.
Coming to get it. There were moments that I liked. There were moments that were rough. Obviously, if I've given it 7 out of 10, I subtracted 3 points for a double S.
Double S?
Slow start. This started so slowly. Maybe that's a triple S. Started so slowly. There was just not much energy there. And
there was slow stuff in the middle, too, though.
No, that's a good point.
There was slow stuff throughout.
And when you compare this episode 8, I mean, maybe it's not fair to compare, but last season, season 5's episode 8 was, of course, Hard Home. That was great. And the previous season, season 4's episode 8 was The Mountain versus the Viper. That great fight at the end between Oberyn Martell and the still living Sir Gregor Clegane. And so those episode 8s were great. This one left me a bit down. It was cold.
And I will say this.
Yeah.
We didn't spend too much time there,
right.
But I think for book readers, I'm not including myself, but but book readers who read this part of the books, which I didn't, about River Run, are probably even more disappointed than I was, because River Run in the end seemed to be a big bucket of nothing.
Well, we will cover a bit of this. We're going to break down the entire episode.
All of it?
We are even going to break down the opening credits, which I know people...
Oh, no, please, not the opening credits.
But I've got to give our double L's...
Double L's.
Our loyal listeners information right at the top. Some of it might be disappointing. This is going to be our last Periscope that immediately follows the East Coast airing of Game of Thrones on a Sunday night. We will still be doing Periscopes. We just will not be doing them after the East Coast airing.
But there's good reasons for this.
Yeah, so next week for episode 9, why don't you tell our listeners, Catfish, what we're going to be doing?
For those of our Triple L's.
Triple L's.
Longtime loyal listeners.
Yep.
They know that I am a member of the Television Academy.
Yep.
And get to go to some special events sometime. And next week, they are showing episode 9. It's not a sneak, really, because they're showing at the same exact time as it's happening. But before that happens, we're going to get a little speech, a little talk by David Benioff. So that'll be pretty exciting.
Right. One of the show creators slash producers of Game of Thrones is going to be talking. This is part of a FYC, For Your Consideration event.
Right.
That the Academy members, they want Game of Thrones to win Emmy. So we're going to be going to this, and we'll be including kind of what we learned from D.B. Weiss at the speech in next week's podcast and next week's Periscope. But because of this event, we will not be able to Periscope live after the East Coast airing. And then for episode 10, we're doing something else, Catfish. What are we doing?
Holy cow. This was a total mistake on my part. However, we had the presumably once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to see Flight of the Conchords live, and it just happens to be the same night as the finale.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was a mistake on my part, and yet the chance to see Flight of the Conchords at the Greek Theater is pretty exciting. So for that one, we'll be doing that on Monday.
Sadly, for that episode 10, we're going to Periscope and do the podcast the next night. And I have to be honest, I know some people love Periscope.
Be honest.
Some people prefer Facebook live chat. So you guys write us, tell us what you want us to do that final episode blowout recap and review. Do you want that Monday night to be a Periscope again, or do you want it to be a Facebook live chat? Let us know.
Ooh, man, so many options.
There are so many options.
Two options.
Let me say also real quick, after that 10th episode on that Monday night, we're going to be giving away all these wonderful prizes here on the Joffrey
Holy
Podcast.
Holy cow, we have so many prizes.
You can get your name into the entry four different ways. You can have your name in the bowl four times to be drawn and win a prize. The first way you can do it is to leave a written review on iTunes or Stitcher. In the United States, iTunes Store, we are 12 written reviews away from 100.
12?
Can we get 12 more written reviews from ULLs in these last 2 weeks?
It seems like we could. It seems like we could.
Right. So if you don't use iTunes, instead use Stitcher, you can write a review there, and that'll get you in the contest.
Whoa. How about that?
The other two ways are go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/doublepodcast. The word double, the single letter P, and the word podcast, plural, facebook.com/doublepodcast. All you have to do is like the page. That can be a second entry into the contest.
Ooh.
Or you can tweet out with the hashtag Joffrey Podcast. Please do it.
That is, you could have your name in four separate times.
Some double L's will have it in. We want to give everybody a fair chance to win these prizes.
And we've made sure to have a lot more prizes this year, because inevitably, Holly Huntpants is going to win one of them. And so we need to have prizes for other people.
Right. Okay, so let's jump into this episode, Catfish. And maybe why I am so down on this episode is it starts off by immediately reminding us of His Grace King Joffrey's death yet again.
And yet, to me, this was the high point of the episode.
Wow, this opening monologue.
This is the most proper, respectful and appreciative memorial of Joffrey that we have ever had. Finally, it's identified that it's Sansa the Whore's fault.
Oh, no.
And that not only was he a golden, blessed child.
He was.
But that vengeance for such a great man is worth life.
It is.
Till the end of your days, you will go and you will revenge Joffrey. Now, the fact is, he's not really dead. He's coming back. Spoiler alert. However,
right? Do you
just like some people thought were upset about Jon, just the idea that Joffrey's been quote-unquote dead and out of our lives for such a long time, that's still something to take revenge on.
Do you think when the play reaches Pentos, they're going to have a major rewrite? Because by then, King Joffrey will reveal that he faked his death to catch the real usurpers.
Well, at that point, Richard E. Grant will be playing Cersei. Since we've had a slight accident with the lead actress.
Not only the lead actress, what do you think happened to the actress who played Sansa's face, Bianca's face? What do you think happened to it? Ouch.
Well, she's shown to be very well-versed in the needle and thread, so I assume that it involved sewing some of her face to a different part of her face. That's my better call.
Okay.
Yeah, nose sewn to cheek.
Now, Lady Crane, she has obviously taken the double A, Arya's advice, and she has changed that speech. Remember how Arya said, well, you know, change it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. After she has this beautiful moment where she's almost crying.
Right.
And then she's like, I will take as long as it takes to avenge Joffrey.
Now, you really liked this. You said this was the best part of the episode. So what do you think? Did you like the fact that Arya, over this past 6 days, people have come up with so many theories about, oh, maybe it wasn't Arya that got stabbed. Maybe it was this. Maybe it was
that. I was so excited about all of those theories, and I was upset that we didn't think of any of them. Of course, again, we do this podcast right after the show.
Immediately.
And why do we do that?
Because we can't be best, so we'll be first.
Exactly. Do one of the two. So we try to be first. This involves a lot of editing for Bubba to take out not only my mistakes, but my ahs and ums. And so he works until the wee hours of the morning so we can get this out first. There were so many exciting theories about Arya, and sadly, none of them proved to be true.
Well, many people, in fact, I had said on Periscope last week, well, maybe Lady Crane will help her, but I didn't take it to be that serious because she got such a bad gut wound. How could Lady Crane, this actress, know healing properties well enough to heal her? Now, she explains it in this scene.
She does.
Guys, you want to be careful when swiping right with Lady Crane. If she catches you not behaving, she knows how to take care of you.
Listen, I'm going to say this.
Yeah.
I have met a lot of very talented actresses in my day.
Right.
And there's a correlation.
Okay.
It's the same with actors. However, I want to say that. I want to be clear. It's not sexist. The better an actor or actress is, the crazy nuttier they are. And I'm not just talking about like fun. I'm talking about the kind of person who will stab you and then sew you right back up if you get home late.
Or what she does know in medicine, she doesn't know in cooking. That was a disgusting soup she served.
She was. And then she said, I've got some milk of the poppy. And then Arya says, I don't like it. And then I wanted the actress to say, it's not for you. Because you are going to be in pain all night. And basically, I need some sleep.
Right.
I'm taking the milk of the poppy. Well, no, if you were Arya.
Yeah. If.
Yeah. You're on the run.
Yeah.
You've gone to the one place where the people from the Temple of Black and White know you know.
Right.
And you have care for this woman. Would you take milk of the poppy and knock yourself out?
No, I would not have. And I guess that would say that would be the only juice, the only energy I felt in this scene was, uh-oh, why is this milk of the poppy? Arya, you do not want to be unconscious. I even felt a little tense when Lady Crane reached up and was grabbing that thing off the top shelf. I was like, ooh, what's going on here?
I thought she's
going
to poison her for some reason.
Yeah.
So I should mention that last week I said I was going to reserve judgment on Arya because I thought it was ridiculous that without a plan she'd actually not only be walking around but not in disguise but also pulling her hair away from her face so it's very easy to tell who she is. So I officially partially downgraded this episode also because I was unhappy with the Arya resolution.
Well, we're getting some feedback on the Periscope chat.
Yeah.
Many people might have been disappointed with this resolution to the Arya story. Well, she takes the potion, she passes out, and then, sure enough, this is something I think we really should have seen coming. If Lady Crane is on a list by the Faceless Men, she's got to go.
Yeah.
Even if she's nice, even if she's sweet, the Many-Faced God was given a name. That name needs to get got. And sure enough, the waif.
It's just like when you went on vacation.
Yeah.
And we were in the middle of the Strain podcast.
Right.
Just because you went on vacation doesn't mean it stopped. No. I had to pick up the slack. You and Mork were both gone and I had to do the podcast. Just because Arya didn't kill her doesn't mean that she's off the death list.
No. And so, sure enough, Lady Crane is going up and she sees, is this supposed to be the actor who plays Joffrey, this man she sees that the waif is wearing a mask of? Or is it just a guy? I couldn't tell it. No, it has to be just a guy. That doesn't look like the actor.
Yeah, it's just some guy.
Why does the waif even wear a mask? It's pretty much, I'm going to come in, then I'm going to kill you.
Just for fun. Just for fun. You got to do it. And when she does it, does she not look around at all? Because once again, Arya is sitting there vulnerable and passed out.
Right. And so the waif does not listen to Jaqen's advice about don't make her suffer. Because not only did Lady Crane suffer, that looks like some serious youch.
Well, he said that about Arya, not about Lady Crane.
Right, but she could have just killed Arya in her sleep. But no, she wants to do this mental suffering. She wants Arya to see Lady Crane dead. She wants to give her, dare I say it, the villain speech. Before I kill you, I'm going to monologue to you, Mr. Bond.
She is, and she just totally T-1000s her.
Right, and so Arya, she knows the S has hit the fan, and she books out of there as best she can. And so the music worked pretty well in this scene. The kind of action of it worked less well. Why? Because they, on a lot of these stunts, they are doing, I assume, face replacement so that the actress who plays Arya and the actress who plays the Waif can do these stunts. But this just wasn't the most thrilling chase. They need to get one of the Bourne directors in if they're going to do this chase. And the people of Braavos, let me say, the pedestrians of Braavos, they don't help you at all. I mean, this is cold. Arya was stabbed last week. No help. Arya is running from her life. They see her running from her life. And, you know, doesn't anybody want to say, call the city watch? Call the guards? What's going on?
But what you're missing is, not only do they not help, but it's almost as if Arya and the Waif are some sort of weather force they don't recognize. Because Arya totally destroys a bunch of fruit carts. Instead of people going to yell at her or even grumbling at her, they're just like, whoa, that damn wind. I better pick up my oranges. Where the hell did that wind come from?
Now, let me say, I've been to Budapest, and the baths there, the steam baths there in Budapest are wonderful.
Yeah.
The Braavos bathhouse, the Double B. The Braavos bathhouse.
Good point.
Not quite as nice as Budapest. And it really was just like, what was the point? Arya, you know, thinks she can lose her, but you cannot lose the waist. You can only hope to contain her.
And when she's running on the roof, and then she does that jump, I mean, it was just ridiculous. I'm sorry, it was ridiculous.
So you couldn't buy into it. You thought it was too silly.
No, I thought it was too silly. This is not, because I did say it before, that this was a chase that did not fit into this world.
Okay. All right.
This is a Bourne Identity chase for sure. Arya would have broken several bones throughout.
A lot of people back a couple episodes ago when Arya, you know, got needle again, went into that dark area and blew out the candle. A lot of people predicted, this was their prediction, that was because Arya was blind, she would fight the Waif in the dark. Arya, she's not doing too well. She is reopening wounds.
She's not.
She's suffering.
She's not doing well.
But did you like that Arya got into that little cove, that shelter of hers, pulled out needle, closed her eyes, and took out the candle? Did you like that badass moment?
I did. Although that perhaps would have been a good place for Arya to hang out the entire time before she left, rather than wandering around.
Well, she did have to, in her defense, I don't think it was a good move going out, and like you said, going out without a disguise, pulling your hair back so everybody can see your face. But she did need to get a boat back to Westeros. She did need to get out of there.
True. Absolutely true.
It's just she should have done it in a smarter way. Arya may have a true Stark trait in that she's not the brightest bulb.
Probably true. So we think she's being trapped. This is kind of a good move when she leaves the bloody fingerprints. Mm-hmm. Instead, she's drawing the T-1000 in, and then she cuts the candle off, and then we don't see the rest of it. So there it is. We just thank you for showing us the crazy chase. No need for us to see the end.
Well, I thought it made sense, but then Arya's a total badass. She knows that she can't have the faceless men chasing after her. So a man or no one or someone who went by the name Jaqen H'ghar, he's walking around the place. He's probably thinking, boy, without the Waif for Arya, I'm going to have to sweep this place myself.
And I got
to
light all the damn candles, too.
But he sees this drops of blood, and sure enough, Arya is leading him down into the Hall
now,
of Faces.
Was that an empty face, or did she have to pull one off to put that one on? Also, it seems that the rest of the faces seem to be done a little bit more carefully. I think she was kind of a butcher there.
Right. What I like is that Arya put it at a place she could reach. You know, what if the only open space was way up high and she's like, oh, great, now I got to put the waif's face up two stories. No, she put it somewhere. Yeah, she did not clean. You know how they spent such special care cleaning the bodies? The Waif, she's like, you can bleed, bitch.
No, I think she just cut the face off and brought the face with her.
Right. Somebody's going to go back to their storage area there at Braavos, be like, yeah, I've got an empty place you can store that, right? Oh, my God.
Good Lord.
Good Lord, there's a body back here without a face.
All right. So what do you think? It's obvious here at the end. To me, what happens is
Jochen
kind of gives her a look like, we're good. I guess the whole idea is that they needed someone dead and someone's dead.
Well, they needed Lady Crane dead, and then theoretically, that is part of the training. You know how my good buddy Double W? My good buddy Willy Wonka, he likes to thin out the children.
Good point.
He likes to thin out the children.
Good point.
By having them sabotage / fall into danger. Here, Jochen is a bit like Willy Wonka. He's like, you know, I can only have one winner, and so whichever one survives.
I thought you were talking about the Wyndham Wizard when you said Double W.
Who?
The Wyndham Wizard.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. Now,
So this is what I'm asking you.
Let's hear it.
Did the Waif's death pay for Arya's death, or do we think that Jochen had a different plan all along? He's still more powerful than her. If she still has to pay for a death, he can come after her.
Well, I would say that because he said, you are finally no one, to me it felt like Arya was saying, hey, Jochen was saying, Arya, you've passed the test. You're one of us. You can defeat one of us, which is, you know, probably the way you get in. The way you get in is prove that you can beat a faceless person.
Oh, it's like joining the gang. You're blood in, blood out.
Sure, I'll take your expertise. That's the way you join a gang.
That's how you join the Wildlings. Blood in, blood out.
Okay. And then she rejected that. So she spent 2 seasons in Braavos, and she learned a lot of skills. They had officially let her be a member of the country club. But she said, you know what? I'm not no one. I'm Arya. I'm going home. Does that excite you, Catfish, that she's going home? Do we want Arya home? We want this show to wrap up and all the storylines to come together. Arya's been on her own. Now she's going home. So in a lot of ways, I like that. I'm not sure.
I like the end result. Okay. I didn't like much of the way we got there.
Okay.
The majority of it I did not like. I still don't understand how she's off the hook. Is she off the hook because she killed the waif in her place? Is she off the hook because Jochen was just trying to get her to embrace herself? I don't feel like he was trying to get her to embrace herself. Especially, he says, you're no one. And she says, you know, bullshit to that. I'm Arya Stark. So,
well, somebody in Periscope just wrote.
I can't see what it says.
Yeah,
yes.
And that's really smart. So somebody in Periscope just said that Jochen likes her. And so they believe that Jochen always liked Arya, so he let her go. So, is that I don't know. That's the way I read it.
It doesn't seem
but that
like
doesn't
was,
seem fulfilling.
It doesn't seem like he was giving her. I mean, he was at times giving her sort of special attention,
right?
But it seems like you can't let him slide. You can't let her slide that much.
Okay, I understand. So,
I'm just confused by that ending. Again, I'm happy for her to be done with this, but partially because I still don't know kind of what happened here, what she learned here.
Dooley's left leg says he believes that Jochen still has a plan for her. I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that's true, Dooley. I can't say that's true. To me, this feels like the end of the story.
I think the next time we see Jochen will be in Dorne.
What do you...
Right. Which is never.
Oh, I know. You want a better call? We're seeing Dorne in episode 10. And spoiler alert. Fairies. All right, so anything else you want to say about the Braavos, Catfish?
Disappointed.
Listeners, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/DoublePPodcast. Tell us what you think. If you are happy with the way this story seemingly has wrapped up, or if you're disappointed, no, you can also tweet out to us on Twitter using the hashtag JoffreyOfPodcast. Catfish, are you ready to check up with somebody we just found out was still alive, the Hound?
Yeah, I'm ready for my boy.
Well, your boy has axe, will murder.
Well, what I like is the entree. Before we get the full effect of the Hound, we get a little humorous bit of what I like to call double F.
Double F?
Yeah, fingering fun.
Oh, you mean this It's not just that they're murderous bastards, but they also really have an odd kinship. What do you call it?
Well, you know, it's the responsibility of the elders to sort of lead the younger ones.
Right. But what's
also
interesting,
to get a little fresh ass.
What's interesting is these younger ones, we didn't see them last week. They might have not had anything to do with the massacre, but the Hound asks no questions.
He does.
You're with them. You are getting fingered by the bad guys. I'll kill you too.
He's tainted by association.
Yeah, and as you were saying, this proves that it wasn't the whole Brotherhood of Banners that went bad. It was just people kind of using their name.
Well, I didn't accept that. I didn't realize that until
we saw
Beric.
Yeah, but you couldn't.
I didn't realize that now. It wasn't until the later scene I realized that. And so, basically, the one guy dies, though, you know, getting a smell of a fresh lady, as he likes to say it. So, at least there was that.
Right. Now, these guys, they are just out camping, you know, they've got a campfire going in the woods, and that Hound just comes up, and he takes care of them.
Well, he brings what I like to call a little double A.
Double A.
Yeah, axe action.
And that's not... This is a very different type of axe body spray. The spray is blood of this axe body spray. And this was just brutal. The Hound is now avenging angel. What were those Charles Bronson movies? Death Wish.
Death Wish, thank
right.
you.
Right, this is Death Wish. So we had the T-1000 in Bravos, and now we got Death Wish with the Brotherhood Without Banners. And
you know, it's funny to see, though. It's nice that brothers
yeah.
who have separated
mm-hmm.
and have gone through their own trials and tribulations
right.
still managed to be strong. The Hound and the Mountain have gone through, they've both had, each had issues,
right.
but they are still badass mother. Shut your mouth, I'm just talking about the Hound and the Mountain.
So the Hound, he kills those four guys, then when he's following their trail, I assume.
Uh-huh.
And what's interesting is those guys, you would assume they would have horses, but the Hound didn't grab their horses. Everybody's leaving horses behind, which is part of the...
Well, the Hound is fine. He's still recovering from a compound fracture, which I'm sure in those days are easily fixed.
Right,
so
I'll just walk everywhere. I'll walk everywhere. Who needs a horse? So he comes upon, sure enough, the Brotherhood, the actual Brotherhood, and it's Beric Dondarrion. We haven't seen him since season 3. It's Thoros of Myr. We haven't seen him since season 3.
Right.
Everybody's back. This is the season of everybody coming back.
Now, were you surprised, shocked, and or disappointed when you realized that it wasn't the entire Brotherhood Without Banners that were bad? I mean, this is quite a coincidence, by the way, that he comes across them. If he misses them by an hour,
right.
he's going to kill the entire group of Brotherhood Without Banners without cease.
Right. If he didn't stumble upon these people, these hung corpses or them about to be hung, he'd be like, Beric, you did this. So this feels like a very odd way for the writers, and admittedly, maybe this does happen in the next book, The Winds of Winter.
Right.
But this feels like a very odd way for the writers to get the Hound together with the Brotherhood Without Banners. It seems like that was their goal. The goal is, okay, we want the Hound on the side with the Brotherhood Without Banners.
Right.
But just a very odd way to get there, I think.
It is an odd way to get there. We spent a whole lot of time. I think, though, that they soften him up with sort of the same speech that he got from Ian McShane,
mm-hmm.
minus a lot of swearing, in that, you know, they say you can still do good. And that's the same thing that Ian McShane said. Now, I don't know whether the Hound really cares about doing good, as he says. He does say something very funny here. I love the black humor, especially when it has to do with the Hound.
What he said?
Well, he says, you know, when they say, sorry, you can't kill all of them. You can't dismember them. You can't maim them. He says, you know, there was a day I would have killed all of you just to get to them. And somebody says, well, yeah, you're getting old.
And is it possible
uh-huh.
with the leg injuries that he really just wanted some boots? Is this a hard? Is the Hound the forefather of Tom McCann?
I can't even think of what to say.
No, you that. Often. That's often true. And so the Brotherhood, seemingly, somebody in the Periscope asked, is he joining the Brotherhood? I think that's what we're supposed to take from it.
Absolutely.
What that necessarily means for the Hound and the Brotherhood going forward, I have no idea. I don't think anybody watching the show can have any idea. But
if, well, let's think about what he would. Let's think about what he would want.
Okay,
what's left in his life? He really, the only thing left for him that he would really want to do.
Yeah.
He's getting an offer here. We're going to go fight, which is basically what he wants to do. But besides that,
yes,
he would just want to go back and kill his brother, right? I mean, there's nothing much more motivating him at this point.
You say that, and I think viewers as a whole would think the Hound wants this revenge on his brother.
Uh-huh.
Yet in the two episodes since we found out the Hound is still alive, he hasn't mentioned his brother once. And in fact, the Brotherhood mentioned cold winds are rising in the north, implying like they're about to go up north and fight the White Walkers, dare yeah. I say it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree that he hasn't mentioned anything about it. He seems kind of lost, realizing right. that, okay, well, what the heck? These guys are going to give me somebody to kill. But mm-hmm. it still doesn't seem like a valid enough reason for him to sort of join with them.
No. In fact, this whole scene, this whole Hound revenge left me a little cold, left me a little wanting. I suppose maybe there was a little jolt when we got that double P.
Double P?
Peekaboo penis. So the ladies are getting a little look, I suppose, with equal
that,
time.
That was the partial nudity we got, was just the the Hound's...
Little dog.
Thank you.
The yeah. Hound's puppy?
The Hound's wiener.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so that was the thing. Now, a lot of people are saying on Periscope what I've heard a lot of complaints about is, and you mentioned it last week, people are very upset because they wanted to see Clegane Bowl. And this seems like it is not happening.
Well, earlier in the episode, we had found out that there wasn't going to be a trial by combat, which right. is how a lot of people has speculated you might get a Clegane Bowl because the reanimated mountain, Sir Gregor, was going to be fighting for Cersei in her trial by combat.
Right.
And they thought, well, if the Hound has really picked up the faith of the Seven, perhaps somehow the High Sparrow might pull the Hound as his champion. Tommen wiped that clean. So it doesn't feel like we're going to have that trial. We're obviously not going to have that trial by combat. And so if there's a battle between the Clegane brothers, it right. isn't going to come like that. I have to be honest, I never thought it was going to come like that. I still think there's a chance they might battle each other, but I never thought it'd be in a trial by combat.
You know, the further we go into this episode, the more I don't know why I gave this a 7. There are so many disappointing parts to this episode.
Oh, you'd go lower?
Yeah. What has the Hound brought back to this show so far?
Violence.
Okay, well, agree. Good, I'll take that. Non-Terminator violence. Show-appropriate violence.
Let's leave the Hound, Catfish, and let's go over to Essos again. So we've been in Braavos, but let's go deeper into Essos. Let's go farther east. Let's go to the free city. Free slave city.
Right.
Of Meereen, and it begins with the first episode of the season. Tyrion and Varys are walking through this city. Nobody's there. It's desolate. Nothing's going on. Now they walk through the city.
Oh, it's bustling.
It's yeah, right. It is a booming metropolis. This is the kind of place that the tourists would go, according to Rick Steves. You know, the wonderful farmer's market is a great place.
Well, the other thing is, too, now it's almost like going to the Vatican. I mean, there's priestesses, red priestesses everywhere.
Yeah, there are. And they are selling that Daenerys was fire. She's a gift from the Lord of Light to her children. And so everything's happy.
Right.
And everything seems
true.
Fine. And this is setting up that Varys is like, okay, everything's settled here. Later, loser. We've done our work. He calls it a, you know, secret mission.
Yeah.
To get help in Westeros.
Why can't he do it through his little pigeons?
His little birds. That is a great question. You'd answer your question.
I don't... They have to get him out of here. I don't know. I was unsatisfied with this, too. There hasn't been enough fun between Tyrion and Varys this year, so what the hell? Let's split them up.
Right. It feels like, in some ways, we have to get Varys out of here, so therefore Varys won't be around with Daenerys, and Daenerys won't be able to question him about, hey, you set King Robert's assassins to kill me and my unborn child, and now you're on my side. F you. You know, she can't have that discussion as long as Varys is around.
Okay.
And it also feels like you can't have Varys there when the slavers show up, when those other slave cities show up. Because once again, he is too smart. He might know a way to beat them. So it almost feels like, let's get him out of the way.
But it seems unsatisfying.
It feels very unsatisfying. A lot of people loved season two, where Varys and Tyrion were on the same side controlling a city.
Yes, and all their machinations were fabulous.
They had nothing in their scenes together this year, did they?
No.
They had nothing.
No, it was boring.
Right. And so I've already called it. I believe Varys is going to the Triple S's.
Triple S's?
Sexy Sand Snakes. Who could he get on their side? Now, admittedly, Varys...
Dun, 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 dun. Dorn.
Now, Varys says that he needs ships. So is it possible Varys will go to Euron Greyjoy? He's like, hey, I heard you're building 1,000 ships.
Yes, we'll have them for you in about 30 years.
And so we don't know where Varys is going. I'm guessing Dorne, in that way. You'll have Dorne in the very first episode of the season and the second episode.
If we were going to have Tyrion and Varys...
Well, we didn't, really.
Couldn't we have just one more fun scene? I mean, they have a little bit of fun, but their repartee has not been crackling this year.
If you disagree, tweet at us once again, hashtag Joffrey Podcast, or go to the Facebook page and let us know if you've liked Marine this season. Holly Huntpants on Periscope agrees with you that they just haven't had much fun. Now, these are scenes, Catfish, you claim you like. So the next time we see Marine, it is Tyrion with Missandei and Grey Worm, and he's trying to loosen him up.
Listen. Tyrion is the party starter. He's always going to have fun. So, yes, this was a fun scene only because what I like about Tyrion is he's always been misunderstood and underappreciated for how good he is at understanding people.
Okay.
And bringing people together and doing the smart thing. So I think it is good for him to try to make a team out of these people and to try to ingratiate himself into them. So this scene could have been funnier. The jokes definitely could have been funnier, but the whole idea was the jokes were horrible. But I appreciated seeing these people try to interact, because it is funny, Tyrion, the crazy wild guy, and these two people who are unemotional. I mean, my God, I know you don't have a penis, but you lighten up.
I assume you're talking about the Grey Worm. You could also be saying
I'm talking about Missandei. She doesn't have a penis either, but she gets to lighten up.
Hey, now, I would say that these scenes, the earlier scene and this one, to me have just been painful. I think the idea is that, hey, if Tyrion is now on Team Daenerys,
right,
he's got to have some camaraderie with the people on Team Daenerys. But it has never really worked for me. None of these...
Right, because they're killjoys.
I think they actually have worked in the past with Daenerys. Now, admittedly, their working in the past with Daenerys is in like a small council-type role to Daenerys, where they're debating things. Like, I think that's where they've always been their strongest.
Okay. But after the years that we have seen Grey Worm,
right,
you didn't appreciate that finally he sort of cracks one little joke?
Yeah.
Something different? You didn't appreciate that? I mean, Hodor only held the door for a minute and a half.
It was over two minutes,
okay,
Catfish.
2 minutes.
Time.
2 minutes. But the fact that we finally see a different side, I think, to Grey Worm shows how important Tyrion is to morale.
I hope so. I hope so. This is crazy because I never liked it before, but I actually would have preferred Grey Worm and Missandei deepening their relationship rather than these bad joke scenes.
Well, I don't know how deep Grey Worm can go. No, one thing I will say is the jokes were bad, but that was really a tough crowd. It was a tough crowd. But what I would like our audience to do, if someone can help, I want someone to please finish the honeycomb and jackass joke.
Because they've been taunting with us for six seasons.
If you can, just finish the honeycomb and jackass joke. We didn't get to the end of that. And again, you don't have to make it a funny joke because the other ones weren't funny.
Right. You'll be starting at the level of the writers.
Exactly. I really enjoy this scene. I like it Tyrion trying to interact with these people that, because they're so stoic,
right,
we never get to see the kind of the human side to them.
Right.
Mostly Grey Worm, but Missandei has also been very closed off.
Right.
And so I like seeing the human side to these people because I care about them,
okay,
and I'd care about them more if they weren't such stones.
Well, let me say that anytime people are happy, you knew that the happiness had to end soon.
Boom.
And I was just waiting for something to go wrong. And I guess I could have predicted this, but I did predict this, Catfish.
You did.
I said that Tyrion's plan wasn't going to work, and here it's not working. We see this massive fleet of slavers coming to Meereen.
Uh-huh.
Now, what I find interesting about this is that you see this giant thing and you think, oh, they could be in trouble. But I couldn't think they'd be in trouble. Why? Because I know Daenerys is coming. And so
I thought she was going to take her time. But as soon as the ship showed up, I thought soon we will see a dragon flying over. Unless it's possible the ships were just there because they heard about this new imp wine that is going to be so good.
Right. It's aged well. The fermentation is.
Now, someone mentioned on Periscope, and I thought this was also a possibility, too.
Okay.
That we could see maybe the Greyjoys show up and do kind of a sea battle. But I thought more likely that and then the dragon.
Did you just
comes.
Have a stroke? Oh,
that was my. That's my horrible. Dragon. It sounds more like a crow. But yeah, that's my dragon voice.
So when we come back to Meereen is on fire. These ships are trebucheting, I assume that's a trebuchet, these pitches of fire into the city. They're lighting Meereen on fire. Uh-oh.
Now, I usually don't like to get into this conversation with you, but mm-hmm. since you hadn't brought it up yet, I'll ask you.
Okay.
What did you think about the CGI during this scene?
I understand it's fake. All of this is fake. The pyramid
okay.
is fake.
Right,
the fire.
Right.
Everything's fake.
Right.
So I kind of was softer on it than other times. I thought it was fine. What did you think of the CG on these ships and these trebuchets and Meereen?
Yeah, looked pretty fake. I will say this, though.
Okay.
What I liked was, and this is, again, another reason that Tyrion sort of channels Joffrey.
Yeah.
And that he says, we should do this. And Grey Worm says, no. And Tyrion listens to him because Tyrion is not a commander. So Tyrion knows when to
yeah.
listen to other people's advice rather than stubbornly go through with whatever he's going to say. And so he says smartly, we can protect this. They come up and get us. We've got them in small little places. We can knife them.
If the Greyjoy ships come
mm-hmm.
and attack these slaver ships, I can't wait for Tyrion to meet Yara Greyjoy because they both use double P.
Double P.
Peer pressure to get people to drink. They're like, drink,
oh,
drink, drink.
I thought it was because not only could they share their brother reviews, but they probably have the same sense of humor when it comes to telling jokes. They
right.
could have a grand old time drinking and slapping holes asses.
Now, Grey Worm's uh-huh. idea, Catfish, is, listen, let's just stay here in the pyramid. We can defend this. Let's make them come to us. Let's
as
not
they,
go to the beach where we would be
up.
Vulnerable.
But then there seems to be sort of a problem with that because they expect them to come up the stairs, and yet sounds like someone is coming through the roof. So it's either Sandy Claus or somebody else who I like to refer as Double D.
Double D.
Deus Ex Daenerys.
This might have been my favorite moment of the episode was the reveal of Daenerys. Not that it was truly that shocking once you heard all that noise on the roof.
Right.
It obviously had to be a dragon to be that high up. But the fact that she comes in so much like a boss, she doesn't even say anything, and it's suddenly like, okay, you're in charge. And then over her shoulder, we see that dragon, Drogon, fly off. And I think he's about to burn some cruises. he's about to give some cruises, some one-star reviews on Yelp.
I tell you, the actress who plays Daenerys, she got this script and she's like, all right, that sounds good. I walk in, I look around, done. 2 hours work. It's over.
Somebody on the Periscope says, Danny has dragon Uber.
Oh, man.
She'll get you there in a couple minutes or left. So that reveal of Daenerys was my favorite moment of the episode. But once again, some of the Marine stuff left me cold. Boy, I'm being tough on this episode too. Maybe I shouldn't have given it a 7.
I'm starting to think it's more like a 6.
Listeners, we want people to love these episodes. So, once again, if you loved it, we want to hear about it. Tweet at us, Facebook us. We want to hear it. We want to hear everybody's opinion. Because I think some people might have loved this episode. I think a lot of people might have loved this scene, which we're going to go over next, King's Landing, where Cersei chooses violence. People have been waiting for this for so long.
That's true. The only thing that upsets me about the Daenerys is I was presuming she was going to kick ass on her way, and maybe she'll tell a story about kicking ass on her way. But, you know, again, it wasn't that satisfying. So I'm sorry. Let's move on to King's Landing, where we have a little bit of excitement that I liked.
Right. Qyburn. Our boy Qyburn, you like Qyburn. He comes in and
I love Qyburn.
And he's letting Queen Cersei, or I guess Queen Regent Cersei. I'm not even sure what her title would be at this point, because she's not she's not queen. Marjorie's queen. But Qyburn lets her know
that she is she who stands in the balcony now.
Yeah, in the peanut gallery. You have fun yeah. over there. Lancel, her cousin Lancel. This is somebody she was having fun sexual relations with in season 1 and season 2, if we're to believe it. They have grown apart.
They have. Now, there's a funny bit here. And again, this show could use some more humor, even though there's a lot of tough things going on. We can see this kind of humor. There's a little bit where one of the brothers looks, that we have him looking at Franken Clegane. And he's just like, whoa, I do not want any part of this. That's a nice little funny bit. Doesn't take us any time.
Right. And once Cersei chooses violence, there is a big...
That was great.
There is a big double S.
Double S?
Sparrow scattering.
She says that you're always welcome to visit the Red Keep.
That was my favorite line of the episode. You're always welcome to visit. And I have to be honest, this my slight disappointment with this scene might go back to how my brain imagined it would play out when I saw it in the trailer. I thought reanimated Gregor, Franken Gregor, I thought he would kill all of them right then. I thought maybe Lancel might run away. But the fact that really only one goes up to fight him.
We only saw one CDC.
CDC?
Yeah, Clegane decapitation.
Right. So when Clegane grabs this, why don't the other sparrows go try to rescue their brother?
I thought he was going to try to pop his head off like a Pez dispenser.
Well, he does a little later. After he chokes him and he throws him down, Sir Gregor, he's kind of like, watch this, boys. There goes a head. And the sparrows
pop.
Right.
They pop when they're ready.
Lancel's like, oh, snap. There goes the head. The head and Lancel were like, oh, snap. But the fact that Cersei doesn't have Franken Gregor take out the rest of them, whoa.
Yeah, it's weird, but I do like Qyburn gives a little FU look to him on the way out. That was nice. Qyburn's like,
Qyburn's proud later. He's proud of his creation. He's like, you could do it. But in the feedback episode and on Twitter, I had been predicting a King's Landing massacre, and this was only a one.
That was it.
That was
there
it.
You go.
That
so,
one, his body got massacred, but there was nothing else to it. And so
even though it was fun, I was disappointed, like you probably were, by this storyline.
Right. But this twist that comes when we next see Cersei, this was a good twist.
A good twist that promises less action.
Ugh, I don't know about that. So Cersei, Qyburn, and Franken Gregor, they come into the throne room. And there are a lot of people
And we
there.
Know that Tommen is getting bad advice, because who is he talking to?
Wait a minute.
Double P.
Double P.
Pussy Pie Cell.
Listen, the thing about kings is... wait for it. They'll get bored and I'll never have to answer.
So, Uncle Kevin, he comes up and a couple of episodes ago, he sounded like he was with Cersei on this plan to, hey, let's get the Tyrell army and let's go free Margaery. But Uncle Kevin, he knows that he's hand to the king by usurper King Tommen's liege. So he now has flipped the script, and he is totally cold.
He is what I like to call a triple S. Sneaky Stark-like survivor. And that he'll do whatever it takes.
Right. he won't even let the queen go to be with her son. Yowch. She gets put up in the gallery with the women.
Oof, that is rough.
And we see Mace Tyrell still there. We see your boy, my boy, Pycelle, talking to King Tommen. But I don't think any of these people really have any sway over Tommen. It's just High Sparrow, 100%. And people, I think everybody who watches this show is sick of Tommen. I think they're sick of him. This is preposterous. I think they want this usurper, Tommen, to go. And it's just because he's so weak-willed. He's such a buffoon that I don't think anybody likes him, and I think they just want him to disappear. And so you said it a couple of podcasts ago, Catfish. If and when Tommen goes, and if we trust the prophecy that we saw at the beginning of Season 5, all of Cersei's children have to go, he's just the worst, and I think people are going to celebrate him going.
Yeah, he's just so
double-W.
Wishy-washy.
Well, he wasn't too wishy-washy in this scene because the High Sparrow got to him and he said, no more trial by combat.
Sir- yeah, but there's two ways to say it.
Yeah.
From here on in, there will be no trial by combat. Or,
yeah.
Well, we're not going to have trial by combat anymore because the crown and the religion are together.
I didn't realize I had turned the volume back up. Did you want to say something? Oh, wait, Catfish, that was you imitating evil usurper King Tommen.
Yeah,
okay.
Oh, he's such a wimp. He is, he will never be one-tenth the man that Joffrey was.
No, I think you can lower the percentage there. You can give me a smaller fraction, Catfish.
Okay, 1/752.
Thank you very much. Now, I want to say I am such a big nerd, Game of Thrones
talk
nerd
to me.
Of
okay.
This show.
Yes.
That I recognized one of the extras, Catfish. This was the most ridiculous thing that I told you, but during the episode,
yes,
Cersei is sent to sit in the gallery with the women, and Cersei goes up. Mm. And one of the women give her a look and then scoot away. And they show this woman a couple of times in this scene. And this woman, guess what? She has been an extra before on Game of Thrones back in Season 3 at Hoster Tully's funeral.
What? She gets around. She's busy.
Right. When Edmure was shooting his arrow and he couldn't land the arrow in his father's funeral boat.
Oh, Edmure, I remember.
They have a great shot of this female extra, looking worried, like, oh, Edmure can't get it up, can't shoot the boat. And sure enough, here, this extra has now made it to King's Landing. So she just loves going to funerals.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, featured extra. You do a great job. I love it, love it. That's the kind of pointless information you'll only hear on the Joffrey podcast.
I
we need
love
12
it.
More reviews on the iTunes store. Give it to us, people.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe she can give us a review.
Right. But we haven't had a review, I don't think, from Northern Ireland. We need one.
Damn it.
Come on, Northern Ireland Extra, who I'm giving you this shout out. So later on, after Tommen totally ruined Cersei's plan. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And, boy, non-book readers, cover your ears.
Okay.
But if you remember what Valonqar means and what that means in the book version of Cersei's prophecy, could younger brother Tommen be leading to the downfall of his own mother? Youch.
Well, he's certainly leading to his own downfall, I'll say that. Which, wasn't she promised that she would see all of her children die?
Yeah, that's what the prophecy
okay,
said.
Okay,
yeah,
so sweet Jesus, before Cersei, Tommen, please.
Oh, well, yeah, if the prophecy is true, it would have to be. Now, here's a scene.
You think they only got 4/5, right?
Okay, so listen to me. Here's a scene which I think viewers are supposed to think about, and I have to be honest, goes back to my Better Call Call from last week.
Okay.
Tommen leaves. He's not even brave enough to go talk to his mother, the little punk. And Qyburn comes up as Cersei is trying to get her son to come to her.
Oh, right. Here, yes.
Qyburn says,
this.
Your grace, that old rumor you told me about.
Right. And she says,
he calls them his little birds have investigated. And Cersei's like, well, what'd you find out? And Qyburn responds to her, it was more than just a rumor. More than just a rumor. So,
okay. Sometimes I'm horribly, people say such horrible things about me, indicating that I may not know things or remember things, which is blatantly not true. So why don't you tell me what you think this is?
All right. I'm not ringing the shame bell for catfish. Oh, I'm ringing the shame bell for spoiler alert.
Okay.
Now, this is a prediction, but it's a prediction I've had for quite a while, and I said it on last week's podcast.
Okay.
So I don't think it's bad to bring up here.
Okay. But let's hear it.
So, Qyburn's like that rumor that you wanted, that you told me about. You wanted
it's
me
an
to
old
look
rumor.
At. Right.
Okay.
Well, catfish, I set it up last week, so I'll go into kind of even deeper thinking now.
Okay, let's bring it.
Do you remember season two? How did Joffrey defeat evil Uncle Stannis?
How did he do it? Well, tell us in glorious detail.
Well, he used wildfire to blow up most of Stannis' fleet, right?
Exactly. Even though Tyrion took all the credit for it.
I know. What a little punk. But how did Tyrion find out about the wildfire? If you go back to season two, Tyrion blackmailed Lancel. Sure enough, we're dealing with Lancel right now. And Lancel told Tyrion that Cersei was planning to use wildfire and hurl it at Stannis' fleet. And Bronn and Tyrion said, ooh, that's a terrible idea. So I think this is Cersei asking about the rumor about wildfire being all over the city of King's Landing when the Mad King said, burn them all! Burn them all! He was setting up, hey, I'm going to burn down this city rather than turn it over to Robert and his rebellion.
Right, and our good listener, BT Mac 11, claims that showing the wildfire in the flashback ruined the season and made it predictable. Not for me, BT Mac, because I can't remember anything that happened more than 4 days ago.
I think you're going a bit high there, but... Well, this is terrible. I hate to say it as a prediction because I really think it'll be true. But if Cersei sets off wildfire in the city, oh, dear Lord, there could be, oh, boy, that could be big, big trouble.
Even though Tommen has gone against her, she still loves him. She doesn't want him to burn, right?
No, she wouldn't want him to burn. But if she could somehow burn just the High Sparrow and all the sparrows, she'll do it. Boy, this is...
You're going to move that stuff? When we saw it burning in Bran's flashbacks,
yeah,
it looked like it was burning right where we saw it in the original caverns.
In that cavern, yeah.
Yes, which seemed... Well, did we ever, again, because it's been more than 4 days since we saw the original wildfire...
Right.
Did we ever know exactly where those caverns were?
No.
In the city?
No, we don't know exactly. They weren't the caverns, we wouldn't believe, where Tyrion visited back in season two. You wouldn't believe, but I don't know. We'll have to see if this is true or not.
All right.
And so that's where we leave King's Landing. I thought it was a great twist. I did love the twist of the High Sparrow and Tommen saying no trial by combat. But I worry that, dare I say it, my prediction is true. I apologize, listeners, if it is true. I don't want to spoil the show for anybody.
Burning would be action, so I'm all for it. Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
What's left in King's Landing that we really like? Jaime's out.
Right.
He's presumably on his way back now that he took care of his business in the most boring way possible for the show.
No. Okay.
Well, this is my damn opinion.
All right.
And... So the only people we care about, really, are Cersei, and
well, somebody,
everybody else can burn. Well, Margaery.
Yeah, but somebody wrote Margaery.
Delicious.
I love my man Pycelle. I love Mace Tyrell.
Oh, Pycelle's going to burn, and he's going to burn hard.
Hey, no.
We know that.
Not cool, fish. Not cool. So,
oh, yeah. Our friend BT Mac 11 reminded us that we love Double B.
Double B.
Baelish's brothel.
Brothel.
Brothel. I think that got...
got pretty ruined by the sparrows.
Yeah. That got subsumed, I think.
All right, Catfish. So we're going to end up in a setting that you really didn't like this week. We're going to end up in River Run.
Yeah, we were in River Run. Basically... So that we could, I just want to get clear what happened in River Run.
Right.
Jaime was sent out of the city for a little while.
Yeah.
And Brienne came down, didn't get anything done, and then left. Am I missing anything besides the fact that, you know, the Blackfish is now dead?
Well, Catfish, I... All right. So this is a better call, not a shame.
Okay.
Did you see the blackfish die?
You know what? Pardon me. You're right, because as I've said to somebody off the podcast, in the show, unless you see someone die, they're probably not dead. And sometimes when you see them die, they're still not dead. So I apologize for making a crazy assumption.
All right. So somebody in Periscope said that this scene provided crazy sexual tension.
Oh, you mean between Braun and Pod?
No, I once again, I gave this episode a 7. This scene between Braun and Pod did nothing for me either. It wasn't very funny, was it?
You know what? This is what I'm surprised about, because you are a very funny person and you like scenes of jocularity. And I thought this was a funny duo that we hadn't seen before. They're interacting. You've got the old, you know, crusty cell sword.
Right.
And Pod, who's sort of still training but wet behind the ears. Mm-hmm. And Braun, this would be a good buddy comedy. I'd like to see the two of these guys go out on the road.
It could be. But did you laugh during the scene between Braun and Pod? I liked the little thing where Braun's like, what do you think Jamie and Brienne are doing? Do you think they're effing?
Yeah, I like it when birdie? I like when Braun said, hell, I'd do Brienne. Come on.
And you should too.
Yeah, he said you should too. Come on.
But the fight scene, Is this
the whole when he suckers him? When he's like, now look down, make sure your legs are spread. Ah, I fooled you. Come on. Suck it up, Pod.
This,
he gives Pod a hard time. He's like, are you still using that python you got in your trousers? Come on.
The double P?
Yeah, the double P.
The Pod's Python.
The Pod's Python.
I have to be honest. Maybe it was me. I didn't giggle. I didn't laugh at this scene as much as I would want to. It felt like, and this is going to be terrible, felt like this scene between Braun and Podrick felt like Braun's barely been in the season. Pod hasn't had much to do this season. Let's give these two a scene so they can do something.
See, and I disagree. What I think this scene and the other scene with Tyrion was, my God, this show is becoming so brutal and depressing. Let's try and find some funny bits to sort of lighten us up and give us a little bit of a break in between things.
Well, I'm glad.
And so maybe I'm embracing those more just because I feel the need for them. So they're making me feel lighter than the scenes actually are, but I feel like they're necessary at this point.
Ooh, well, somebody in the chat room called it a double L.
Double L.
Little Lane.
Well,
ouch. And Holly Huntpants agrees with me too. So I hope people are like Catfish. I hope everybody enjoyed it. That particular bit, and you would think those two characters would have been magic for me, it just didn't work. So
I say this at the double B.
Double B.
Yeah, Baelish's brother. Nobody called. Nobody said a little or lame about Podrick.
Catfish, I want you to say the word brothel again.
Brothel.
No, you say brothel.
Brothel.
Brothel. Brothel.
You know what? You don't even say Sansa right. She's the main character, for God's sakes.
Sansa, tomato, tomato, brothel.
Now,
brothel.
This is what I thought.
Yeah?
This was one of the few scenes I really liked.
Oh, I did too.
In this episode.
Too. Which scene
between,
is that?
This is the first scene between Brienne and Jaime, and it made me thought, what could have been for this ship for Jian? Jian could have been so good. This is the kind of scene that is good because we have a lot of snarling and mustache twisting on the show, which I enjoy.
Right.
But I also like the kind of thing where there are two people on opposite sides who respect each other and are kind of following a code. These might be the only two people.
Yeah.
In this entire show that believe in a code, but they do, and that makes their relationship interesting.
Right, and it feels like Brienne brings out the best in Jaime, doesn't it? It feels like even if he can't come to quote-unquote the good side of not be with the evil phrase, he at least feels guilty about it.
Well, he does feel guilty about it, and also I feel like he would have... You can disagree with me if you like.
Okay.
I feel like he would have honored that proposal that she gave, that if she could have gotten the blackfish to give up, he would have let them go. Do you believe or no?
Oh, I do too. I do too.
Because a lot of our listeners believe that he is an oath breaker and they don't believe him for 1 second.
Okay. Well, the one thing tied to this is Jaime has a lot of power, but from where River Run is to get back north, Not on the King's Road. On the King's Road, you don't go by the Twins. But from where River Run is, to get north, you do need to go through the Twins. And would Walder Frey let a Tully army march through his keep and castle? I don't think so. So
you're saying that Jaime might have allowed it just because it's like, well, they're going to have their own problems when they get going.
No, I think that Blackfish was right to kind of turn it down in a lot of ways.
Right, but I don't think he was turning it down for that reason. I think he was turning it down for... screw that. I'm not giving up my home to right. go help with the Snows. I mean, sorry, the Starks. I'm calling them the Snows now. who I'm loyal to but are in disarray.
Yeah, I thought everybody had a relative good point. So that's why I liked this bit of the River Run scene. I even liked the scene with Brienne and the Blackfish.
I like that scene, and then when we get to the scene between Jaime and Edmure, who I like to call the British Double R.
Double R.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds.
You think, boy, that actor, I've seen Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds has come to my gym. This actor, Tobias Mendez, he's a great actor.
I've seen him in lots of things.
But why, he doesn't look like Ryan Reynolds at all. Where's that come from?
I kind of got that Ryan Reynolds feel from him. You know, he's sort of a... kind of a joke. He's more reserved than Ryan Reynolds, mm-hmm. but he does have the sort of that jokish side. He was just played a sleazy guy in The Night Gardener.
Oh, that's true.
Which
that's
I enjoyed.
True. Spoiler alert for The Night Gardener. Now, our Vikes right, fan sorry. On Periscope said that the River Run scenes felt pointless to him.
In the end, they were pointless.
Well, in the end, that's what's tricky is that I think there's going to be quote unquote more to this. And I would say if you remember the preseason trailers, that might hint that there's going to be more, but I don't want to say any more. I may have spoiled enough in this episode.
Okay. Well, at this point,
yeah.
Jaime seems like he's gotten what he wanted, which was just to get back home.
Right. Well, right? Let's get the way he got there though. And because okay. this is a scene I've seen people in the Periscope saying they love this scene between Jaime and Edmure. And I have to be honest, it felt a little off for me. Just as I said the scene between Bronn and Pod was there so it would give those actors something to do, this Jaime-Edmure scene to me felt a bit like, hey, let's give Nikolai Coster-Waldau, the actor who plays Jaime, let's give him an Emmy speech.
Well, it's not just that. And what I like is he actually says it out loud a little bit after I was thinking it, but basically it's like, you're tied up, so you got to listen to this monologue. You know, I'm thinking, oh, God, another forced monologue. Now, we have a quick question, though,
yeah.
because sometimes people want to know, we have personal information. So one of our Periscope listeners wants to know, did you have a steam shower scene with Ryan Reynolds like we saw with Arya tonight? The towel snapping and jocularity?
Ryan Reynolds.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to gross everybody out, but he never showered at the gym. He would go work out and then leave. So maybe he showered when he got home, but he didn't shower at the gym.
I wouldn't want to shower with you either.
Hey, I kept saying, hey, Ryan.
Come on.
Let's do this.
Look, I got a wet willy. I wet the end of the towel. Snappy,
right.
Snappy.
Okay. So, but once again, this Jaime and Edmure scene, stay on target. What did you, did you like it? People in the Periscope chat liked it. What did you think?
When it first started, I thought, oh, this is a horrible, we're going to get another monologue
right.
that's sort of a larger monologue. Mm-hmm. But what happened was it got sharper and sharper and to the point where it was like, I was like, wow, this is great. Because what he's telling them it's great. He's saying, yeah. I love Cersei. This was a great speech. I love Cersei.
Right.
I don't care who thinks it's horrible. And all I care about is getting back to her. And I will do whatever it takes to get back to her. So I will, you know, I'll murder your children. I'll murder your wife. I'll do whatever. So you got to do this. So in the end, what it built to, I thought was a very powerful moment. And
yeah.
was probably the only way I would have bought Edmure doing what he did. So in that way, I thought it was very well done.
All right. And Edmure, he talks trash. For a prisoner, he's talking trash. I like that. But, and certainly when you've suffered like he has, you would talk trash. You wouldn't take this man's word. But at this point, you don't have to take his word at all. He says he's going to do it if you believe he's going to do it, and he convinces you he's going to do it. Then, in some ways, it makes sense.
My only fault with Edmure was not getting a better deal.
Oh, that's a good point.
In other words, he could have probably gotten the deal that Brienne wanted. And in fact, that's what I thought the deal that he was going to get was, you guys come on in and we'll leave. Instead, Edmure got the shittiest deal he could possibly get.
Yeah, the one deal, the part of the deal that I didn't like was Edmure turning over the Blackfish, like his uncle. Yeah, you know, yes, his uncle did these things with him recently where he said, yeah, hang my son, whatever.
Yeah, I understand where Edmure's coming from
he's
there.
He's your uncle, Edmure. Save him. Now, I don't want to touch...
Well, again, yeah, he just made a horrible deal.
You're right.
He could have made a much better deal. But again, think about his situation. How long has he been in captivity?
Right.
He's looking for kind of any way out. But basically, even though he comes off as sort of heroic here, basically this just reinforces that he's kind of a moron. And also that the system where a guy who's been in captivity for years is still your lord and you should listen to him even when he says, surrender to my foes, that is a bad, bad system. There could not be a worse system than, he's the lord, I gotta listen to him.
Now, we do not want to touch on book stuff here. I know I've mentioned a little book stuff so far.
I promise I won't touch on any book stuff here.
I know you can't. But one person who keeps coming up in this Jaime speech is Edmure's sister, Catelyn Tully, a.k.a. Cat Stark.
Got it.
And so
uh-huh.
Catelyn and Cersei keep being brought up as counterpoints on this. Like, they love their children. Look what they would do.
Right.
To protect their children. Edmure, what are you going to do to protect your child? And so
right.
We'll see where this goes.
Well, it just goes to show, I thought there was only two kind of touches.
A bad touch and a good touch, what do you mean?
Yeah, but now there's a book touch.
A little BT, a little, you know, I...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Flip through little, some pages.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Skip ahead.
All right, so Edmure goes in and... The Blackfish doesn't want them to lower the drawbridge, but this was, even though, yes, maybe this scene peters out, this, I think, is an interesting point. This is about, like, hey, he's actually my lord. I got to listen to him. And so the fact that...
I think you listen to him right up to the point where he says, let the enemy in and put down your weapons.
Yeah.
Ugh. At a certain point, right? You got to revolt.
Well, they did what they had to do. The Blackfish helps Brienne and Pod get on a boat. And this is what I was joking about. Nobody gets their horses. Why don't they just sneak away? Why don't they go get their horses? Why are they on this boat?
Basically, the castle is surrounded by a moat and water.
And a river.
And yes, there's a bunch of people coming in. I don't think they could sneak out. This is the only way they can really sneak out is like Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn on the Mississippi River.
But do they...
K-Ro, K-Ro.
But do they need to sneak out, Catfish? Do they need to sneak out? There was no fight. What fight are they running from?
Well, maybe Jaime would have let them go. However, even at the point where he's on the wall, and that's kind of ridiculous, the wave, hesitant, he looks over, is it, can anyone else see? No, okay, I'll wave, and then she'll wave back. It seems like, since she's a representative of the Starks, that would not pass.
Okay, fair enough. Is this, let's hear a better call. Is this the last time that Jaime and Brienne are ever going to see each other? There are only two more seasons. I can't imagine they'd see each other again this season in the final two episodes.
I'm going to say yes, unless they meet in Dorne. I got everybody going to Dorne because after the whole war's
right,
over,
there's White Walkers in the north. That you're like,
it's your vacation spot. I told you it's Dorne.
The Freys and the Lannister forces march in. This is the most depressing ending you could get. And Brienne is trying to convince the Blackfish to go with her and Pod. And he says he's not going to go, and hasn't been in a sword fight in a long time. And so
this just goes to show you that the Tullys, like the Starks, are just stupid.
What do you mean?
Stupid. Why should he fight one man against a thousand?
Yeah.
Go off and do good somewhere else instead of this hopeless battle, unless you think that he's not dead and the soldiers who do want, who didn't agree with Edmure, are sort of pretending that he's dead and there's going to be a big uprising.
Why wouldn't they show us that death is what I wonder. In an episode which we both said was slow at points, why not give that battle?
Because, you know, why
it could be a heroic moment seeing this man, you know, this old warrior go out fight.
Why not show the waif's death? I mean, sometimes it's just like, okay, we're at a certain point. Why spend time on this, on another sword fight?
I'm going to hold out a, call me crazy, I'm going to hold out a 50% chance that the Blackfish is still alive.
I think Blackfish is double D.
Double D.
Deadly dead.
Thank goodness we have a double for that there. So good. How do you think Jamie reacted to hearing that news that the Blackfish is dead?
Well, he seemed to be a little bummed about it, which is odd because I think he should have had, it should have been more like a tip of a cap, because Jamie wouldn't allow himself to be captured. He's going to go and kill him, or, you know, he's got the sword in one hand and he's got the gold hand in the other one he can do some fisting with. So either way, he's going to go out. More fisting by Jamie.
Hey now. So that's the episode, Catfish. We've gone through it. Do you want to lower your review?
I'm going to go down to a 6 now.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Ouch.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay at 7, but maybe this is my own fault. Maybe I got too hyped for it, but I was expecting more out of this episode. And so, yeah, I'm going to say
it wasn't
7.
Just that. For me, it was, after looking at everything that was over, there were a few great scenes, all involving Jamie. A bunch of other storylines got sort of shoved to the side or just kind of resolved in a ho-hum way. So, there we go.
Okay, well, next week's episode, Episode 9, the big episode, normally is entitled The Battle of Bastards. The preview shows it's going to see the characters we didn't see this week. John, Ramsay. We haven't seen Ramsay since Episode 4. We haven't seen Rickon since he showed up in Episode 3.
Oh, good old Rickon. We expect that one. We just saw the previews for next week were pretty much just the battle. So we presume that's going to be an amazing battle. One would hope,
since we're so down on this episode. Write us, let us know if you agree and we're down on this Episode 8 or if you liked it. Our opinion isn't the greatest opinion. It's just one of many. We want to know what you double L's think. So go to a Facebook page. Go to Twitter. Catfish, let's...
Right, and remember, we only need 12 more reviews on iTunes to get to the Magic 100. And, Bubba, you may not be aware of this. I mentioned it early on in the season, maybe the first episode.
Let's hear it.
That, the Double P Podcast Network, sometime during this season, it was 5, 6, or 7, something I counted earlier, we reached our 100th podcast.
Right, for all across the Double P podcast.
For all across the Double P, yes, not just Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
obviously,
we've got over 50 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is going to be a big, big summer for us. We got a bunch of shows coming up. It's going to be exciting. We're going to end this Joffrey podcast the way we end every The Joffrey podcast.
Ooh.
By reading our reviews we got on iTunes and Stitcher and giving our Joffrey of the Week. You don't want to miss that. Catfish, we got 3 new reviews in the USA iTunes store. Why don't you read this first one?
Why don't I read the second one? Oh. It's by the Joffrey of Listeners 67.
Yay! Hey.
The title is Joffrey Sacrificed Himself in His World So That He Could Save Ours. 5-star review. So true.
Huh.
It says, celebrity host Bubbles and Dogfish share their stupendous double K.
Double K.
Kafka-esque charisma.
Ooh.
And their unbelievable double C.
Double C.
Also Kafka-esque charisma. I think we all know in our hearts what the J in GDJT really stands for.
What's that?
I don't know. I think it's Joffrey, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay.
But if only I knew what the D and the T stand for. He says, Joffrey also would have MWGA, but instead he will MAGA. It is known.
Heck yeah. I'm glad that they put it is known at the end of this, so I know what is known.
It is so known, and maybe some other people know more than I do what that meant. I'll read the second one as well.
What's it? Okay.
The One True A Song of Ice and Fire podcast, another 5-star by Hello_Kitty 1919.
Thank you so much, Hello Kitty, 1919.
I have been a fan of both the A Song of Ice and Fire book and the Game of Thrones show for several years now, and I'm sorry to admit that I was once a sweet summer child.
Oh, no.
Yes, I was one of those fools who believed that the evil Starks were the protagonists of this epic story and that the true King Joffrey was only a vile sadist.
What?
But one day I happened upon the Joffrey podcast and my views have been forever reversed.
Oh, good.
We have straightened the unstraightener there.
Heck yeah.
Bubba. He says, Bubba and Catfish's
or
insight.
She says.
Or she. Insight into the bravery and wisdom of the true King Joffrey as well as his story arc to come to life is changing. I now know the ignorance of my past beliefs about A Song of Ice and Fire, and I have been a fan of the true King Joffrey ever since. Truly, this is a great podcast.
Thank you very much for that review.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
I will read the iTunes review that Catfish is unwilling to read.
And for good reason.
Now, the title of the podcast is Witty Humor is Coming, 5 stars.
Oh, nice.
And it says...
But who is it by?
It's by Bobby Dean 5.
Okay, great.
Your fifth favorite, Bobby Dean.
Might be lower for me.
And the reason why is the article is written, it says, Bubba is great. Catfish is meh. Long time double L here, and this podcast always makes me laugh out loud. Ooh, we try, Bobby Dean, we try. A lot of times we fail, but thank you for saying that. Love the shame bell. Love that you guys record live on Periscope.
That's
and
right.
Interact with your double L's.
Double L's.
Loyal listeners.
Oh, right. I think he said that.
Bobby goes on and says, keep up the awesome work, guys. And what I said about Catfish, I was double K.
Double K?
Kind of kidding.
Oh, kind of. Okay, good.
Kind of. He's all right, even if he forgets events that happened in season 5.
True, to my shame.
Bubba's tone with Catfish, classic.
No, some people will give you a hard time, but apparently he likes that you browbeat me.
Yeah. All right, he said he loves the gag reel at the end of the most recent feedback podcast. It was hilarious. All hail his grace, Joffrey of Houses Baratheon and Lannister, first of his name, King of the Andals and the First Men, Lord of the Seven Kingdoms, and Protector of the Realm. Heck yeah, great review.
Bobby Dean 5, thank you very much. I appreciate that. You know what? It is true that I am not on top of things as I should be, but I like to consider that I'm here, number one, for my good looks, and number two, for my stellar humor. Now, because I don't have either one of those,
hey, no,
I try to give as much as I can. But you know what?
What?
Bubba keeps me in line, but thank you for that review, Bobby Dean. I appreciate
it. It's a hard line. Hard line. Here, somebody in Periscope said Catfish greater than Bubba. Look, draw lines. The lines are being drawn.
No, it's none of that is necessary, but I appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll edit that out of the bio. All right. We also got some reviews from Stitcher. Let's go through them real quick. We got a 5 out of 5 stars from Gern Branston. They wrote just yet another double R.
Double R.
Rave review for the Joffrey podcast.
Yeah.
This is the most fun Game of Thrones podcast around, bar none. Bubba and Catfish are hilarious, insightful, and just daggone likable.
Oh, good.
Here's his Better Call Call.
Yeah?
This one true podcast will be remembered long after the other Game of Thrones podcasts have faded from memory, much like our beloved King Joffrey. First of his name, first in your heart. Thank you so much.
Oh, Gern, you rock. Now, another one we got was from JM Dollar.
Hey.
Another 5 out of 5 stars. Says, love this show. I look forward to listening to it. They say, I'm a Game of Thrones junkie and listen to podcasts while I'm at work after every show. When I first found the show, I immediately fell in love with the humor of Bubba and Catfish.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work, guys.
We're going to
try. No, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Our final review is from, is that pronounced fallacious?
Yes, fallacious. Not fallacious, as in wrong. Fallacious, as in what happens at Baelish's joints.
It's 5 out of 5 stars. Funny guys make the most entertaining and hilarious podcast on Game of Thrones. Thank you so much for lying to people. I listen to half dozen of Game of Thrones podcasts, and these guys are my staple.
Yeah, yeah.
The uncanny worship of His Grace King Joffrey borders on the ridiculous. What?
Well, no, that's not.
But with the names of, like, Bubba and Catfish, what do you expect? Ooh, thank you for these great reviews. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
You know what? I just want to say this to Fallacious. I know that
Yes. You're
saying that our worship is ridiculous because we don't say enough how much we love and respect King Joffrey.
Oh, yeah.
So he may be docking us a little bit
Sure. For
not seeming to be appreciative enough of what Joffrey's brought to all of our lives. But I want to let Fallacious know for sure.
Yeah.
Listen, No one believes in, loves, appreciates, and incorporates as much of Joffrey's.
You're touching yourself right
as
now.
We are. I do because I just feel like Joffrey is inside of me right now.
Good,
and not the way the Brother Without Banners was inside of his friend.
All right, let's get to our Joffrey of the week. This could be a person, ooh, a place, a thing, an idea. It can be from the show. It can be out there in the larger world. What is your Joffrey for the week? Catfish, let's hear it.
Well, my Joffrey of the week is, yeah, I just kind of spoiled it. It is the man who, like Joffrey,
yeah,
was a teacher.
A teacher.
A lover. And someone
big
who
lover
just gets like super close.
Right.
And just embraces the totality of his followers.
Sure.
So for the man that stuck his finger in his friend's ass, that's my Joffrey of the week.
Now, Catfish, my Joffrey of the week is,
yeah,
somebody who learned from Joffrey, learned,
oh,
how it went. This person,
uh-huh,
saw,
uh-huh,
he saw three people about to be hung,
right,
where they would die instantaneously, and he said, that's not good enough. So for wanting pain.
And suffering.
He didn't get it because he's not as strong as Joffrey, but he wanted it.
Right.
For wanting pain, my Joffrey of the week. The Hound.
Oh,
he spent all those years studying under Joffrey. Now he knows.
That is a great Joffrey of the week.
It of course. So we apologize, everybody. Once again, we are not going to be able to do Periscopes next week because we're going to a special screening with Game of Thrones creator and producer D.B. Weiss. We'll report it back to you. So we'll probably do a Periscope probably around after the West Coast airing of Game of Thrones. So
we are going to do the Periscope.
Yeah, we're
just going to do it late next Sunday night.
Right. And,
okay.
And after the final, the 10th episode, we're going to have to move that to Monday, but we are going to Periscope on that Monday or do a Facebook Live if you guys would prefer that. Let us know.
You know what? We had just had a great question on Periscope.
Let's hear it.
They wonder, Stone for Trump wonders who, yeah, will win Joffrey of the Year.
Well, Stone for Trump, Trump would make better deals than Edmure. Edmure taking a bad deal. But we will give that away on the final episode, Joffrey of the Year, definitely.
And we have got, that is going to be a super big old podcast because,
yeah,
we have so many gifts to give away to our listeners.
All right, so you will hear us next time on
The Joffrey of Podcasts. Finger and ass edition.
Explicit again.